May we please proceed with case number one, Ronald Castro versus the Chicago Housing Authority.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Reliath. I represent the Chicago Housing Authority. May it please the court. The Chicago Housing Authority is a municipal corporation organized under state law. Its primary and only purpose and function is to provide low-rent housing to persons with low income. This governmental function is best evidenced by a review of its finances for the 1998 year, which was the last year before this lawsuit. At that time, the Chicago Housing Authority had a total operating expense of $296 million and total revenues of only $52 million, of which $37 million were from the rents received from its tenants. So it had a loss of $243.5 million, which is an indication, and I think the best indication, of its purpose, its social purpose, to provide housing to low-income individuals. In 1999, the CHA, faced with this limited and indeed depressing economic situation, closed its police department. Before eliminating the police department, the CHA's in-house legal counsel analyzed the applicability of the Warren Act and determined that the CHA was not an employer under Warren.
Counsel, the Chicago Housing Authority did not start out with the police department, did it?
No, it did not, Your Honor. Its history was that the police department was initiated in 1979 in response to concerns of the tenants regarding the police services then in place.
But it functioned as a governmental police department, in other words, full police authority to make arrests and...
Full police authority on the grounds of the housing.
On the actual premises and
yes.
Within.
Yes. Then, Your Honor, in addition to the in-house review by counsel...
Well, stay on that for a minute.
Sure.
It seems that was not quite as elaborate an opinion as you make it out to be. There was nothing in writing, no penetrating legal analysis of whether this act applied to the housing authority. What do you say about that?
Well, first off, the in-house counsel examined every document that was relevant, as did the district court judge in its analysis. There are no cases. You have the statute.
Well, is it Moriarty?
Yes.
Did he analyze this Department of Labor interpretation of the statute?
Yes, he did, Your Honor, thoroughly. And he
did. Is there anything in writing that where he either analyzed it and came to a different conclusion?
There is nothing in writing, Your Honor, but I think his testimony at trial indicates how thorough he was. He went to the Department of Labor regulation and determined where the regulation states that you have to be engaged in a commercial or mercantile enterprise. He concluded that the CHA is not a mercantile enterprise, that its purpose, indeed its sole purpose, is to provide housing for individuals, families with low or non-existent income. He said it's the antithesis of a mercantile enterprise. And while Judge Lefkoe came to the other conclusion, I think she was wrong, but the important point here is that he did make that analysis. He testified at trial regarding that analysis, and there was no dispute as to the analysis and his process. The complaint was that he did not write anything down, and I'm submitting to you that that is not required under the Act.
Well, it's not required, but if you're going to put weight in a in-house counsel's opinion, you would think on an important issue like this, on whether this Act applies or not, that there'd be something a little more concrete to look at.
Your Honor, as to what would be concrete, I would agree with you if there was a statute, if there was something definitive. What we're really asking, in hindsight, is that Mr. Moriarty write a law review article. Because
no.
That was the analysis.
A legal opinion, not a law review article.
And legal opinions, Your Honor, can be oral or written.
That's true.
And he communicated.
Which one do you give more credence to? One where you can get the entire analysis.
In hindsight, obviously, based upon these questions, it would be easier to answer if there was a written opinion. But I don't think that is required.
No. All right.
And
we understand your position.
And, Your Honor, first off, the issue of the whether or not there is a written opinion only goes to
the good faith.
Exactly.
But what about the purpose of the Act itself? It seems that what do you think the purpose of the Warren Act is?
I think the purpose of the Warren Act is to give notice to employees in the non-governmental sector, private employees working for private companies, to give them notice, 60 days notice, so that they can cushion the economic fallout of a loss in job and give them a period of time to begin their search. Now, if that's the case, and indeed if Warren is limited to private employers, as I believe it is, under the good faith approach, even if it, for purposes of argument, if it applies to governmental units, look at what the CHA did to show not only good faith, but to lessen the impact of the layoff. It hired an outside consulting firm to assist these individuals in obtaining other employment. It held a job fair, of which over 170 of the 274 class members either attended or were given material regarding other jobs. It provided $516,000 in severance pay.
Was that the only thing that wasn't required under the collective bargaining agreement? $500,000?
Outsourcing the Challenger and Gray services were not required. The severance pay was not required. The extension of the health care benefit for another $338,000 was not required. And indeed, the settling of all of the disputes was not required under the collective bargaining agreement. They could have gone on to arbitration, grievances, grievance resolution, or indeed court appeal. So under the collective bargaining agreement, the only thing that was required was that the union and the CHA meet to discuss the effect of the closure. There was no requirement of any agreement. There was no requirement of settling of any disputes. The only item was the requirement of meeting with the union. And that, Your Honor, again indicates, in my opinion, where the district court missed the argument. Good faith here is exemplified by everything that the CHA did. And based upon its actions, even if the Act does not apply, even if the Act does apply, good faith should have been given to the CHA's actions. But I'd like
that would reduce your damages by about half. or the damages by about half?
Well, there are two components here. First off, the severance payments at $516,000, we claim were voluntary and unconditional, and indeed everyone admitted at trial that the collective bargaining agreements do not require that payment. So that, we say, is a dollar for dollar set off. So
your own belief is that was gratuitous.
Yes.
On behalf of the housing authority.
Yes, there is no obligation in collective bargaining or the law to make those payments. So that's $516,000.
And the health benefits?
The health benefit, which again is a little strange for the district court, we got credit for those as voluntary. And yet, admittedly, they weren't part of the collective bargaining agreements because they were after the closure of the department, yet the district judge did not give us the credit for the $516,000. So we have the $516,000, and then we claim that under good faith that that would leave another $600,000, $700,000. Certainly, it's our belief in establishing good faith that there would be no liability at all.
Sir, you're into your rebuttal time now.
Yes.
You can continue if you want, but you are into it.
Let me just state again, though, that the Warren Act does not define employer, but the other acts, and we gave examples of that in the brief, the ADA, FMLA, and ADEA specifically mention governmental employers to be included in the act. So it's our position that either under the act itself or the regulation, because we are not a mercantile or commercial enterprise, that Warren does not apply. And I'll use the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Right, counsel. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Zane Smith, and I represent the plaintiff class in this case. This appeal is being brought forth by the CHA based upon their belief that the trial court was in error when it made a determination that the Warren Act applied to the CHA and that it was contemplated to apply to entities such as the CHA when interpreting the congressional intent. The CHA did, is, and should be under the umbrella of the kind of entity that the Warren Act should apply to. They are a public / quasi-public entity. They manage public assets. And if the court looks at the examples of those kinds of entities that would be included within the Warren Act, such as the regional transportation authorities or municipal utilities, under that definition, it's hard to imagine an entity that would fit more squarely under the definition.
That if the city of Chicago ran the housing authority as an entity of the city of Chicago, not separately constituted, it would not be covered.
I agree.
That just seems sort of odd, then, that if the city thinks it's more efficient to run a housing authority and provide low-income housing, and the most efficient way to do that is to set up a separate entity to do that, then it exposes itself to liability under this Warren Act.
Well, I think the congressional intent was to put as many entities as possible under the Warren Act umbrella. It was the specific carving out of the exceptions for governmental entities that was added to protect those governmental entities that were contemplated, school boards, villages, cities. In answer to your question, I think if we look at the social good, if you will, the social intent, the public policy of giving displaced workers as much possible to retrain, to get a new job, to plan for that departure, then there really should be no reason why the CHA would be excluded from those list of entities that should be subject to the Warren Act requirements.
But wasn't the Act really passed to sort of get at the company say that is here today and tomorrow and moves its operation to Mexico or something, and everybody reports the work on Monday and finds out the plant is closed and everybody's gone. And that's not going to happen in something like a local governmental entity like this.
I agree. I think that the impetus for the act arose out of the 1970s when car manufacturers were closing down huge assembly plants and putting hundreds and if not thousands of workers out of place. But the same philosophy should apply in this case. These are officers who had upwards of 10 years of history with the CHA who were terminated with 10, 12, 14 days notice. The very purpose of the act is to allow the officers and the security personnel time to acclimate, time to get back and into society, get a new job, protect their families, protect their assets. I do want to touch on one subject, though, that was brought up, this issue of the research. I think it's important to note that in the context of Mr. Moriarty's opinion and the time that he rendered an opinion to the CHA regarding his opinion that the Warren Act did not apply, this was at a time when there had already been a decision by the CHA to terminate the trade unions. This was, if you will, a response to an issue brought up by one of the other unions as opposed to a good faith attempt on the part of the CHA to try to comply with or at least attempt in good faith to comply with the Warren Act requirements. Excuse me. In terms of the, or in responding to the issue of the good faith, the burden was on the CHA to prove that good faith. The burden is on the CHA to show that not only was there an subjective intent to comply, but that there was also an objective reasonableness in applying the act to the particular situation. That is the decision to terminate those officers. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right, counsel. How much time does he have, please? All right.
I will certainly keep it within 3 minutes, Your Honor. First off, the Warren Act does not define governmental units as employers. It just says that employer is one who engages in a business enterprise. That in and of itself, I think, negates the argument that a governmental entity like the CHA is subject to it. It's not a business enterprise. Whatever the regulations say, and indeed I think they support that conclusion, the regulations say that the business enterprises take part in a commercial or industrial enterprise. That's the antithesis of what the CHA does. The CHA does not engage in a commercial.
Are you convinced that it didn't have any governmental ties?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are you convinced that it didn't have any governmental ties?
The Warren Act?
No, the CHA.
The CHA does have governmental ties. Yes, it does. It is a governmental
under
body.
Under HUD, too.
Yes. But it, by being a governmental body, it is excluded, on the one hand, I think, by the statute itself. Second, if you look at the regulation.
But doesn't it act independently now?
It does not act independently of the federal government because it gets its largest subsidy from HUD. In 1998, it was $193 million. HUD establishes regulations by which the CHA has to comply with. So it does not exercise complete independence as might other governmental bodies. It also, under the regulation, is, as I said, not a commercial enterprise, nor does it engage in any mercantile basis, which is the second part of that regulation.
Well, there's also the provide independent management of public assets.
Yes, Your Honor, but you have to fit into both categories. It's an and there. So you have to do...
Well, I'm looking here, it says or provide independent management of public assets.
Yes, and then, but it has to be all of those, or one or the other, or two out of the three, and we don't provide independent management.
Or do you have any case law to support that theory?
There is no.
I mean, that it has to have all three?
Your Honor, this is a case of first impression, so there is no case law on
that's what
the
I
subject.
Thought.
Which, again, if I may switch to the issue of back to research, again indicates regarding a written opinion what would or would not have been stated.
If we were to determine that you did come under the Act, but your action was taken in good faith, what's the bottom line? What would you owe, if anything?
Nothing, Your Honor.
So you're adding the the $600,000 and the half million that
right, and or I think you can look at it under good faith also, that under the good faith exception there is a total dismissal of liability. We just quantified it to give an alternate approach to both the trial court and to you. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case under advisement and proceed.